So this is the third day of our retreat here in Tampa, composting fear into fearlessness, the Buddhist path of non-fear. And I know that over these days, you have been composting. For anybody who's ever composted, you know composting is more than reading books about composting. It is more. It's more than building a structure or buying a composter. It is more than telling everybody you know that you're getting into composting. You bought a composter. It is more about looking at it, thinking about it. If you're going to compost, you got to get dirty. You got to work with the garbage. If you're not working with the garbage, you're not composting. And if you're not working with your fear, with the fears, with the anxieties, with the worries, then you're not practicing. Right? In the same way, if I came to your house and I saw this big pile of garbage out there, and next to it your compost pile, but there was nothing in your compost bin or anything, it was all just, I would say, I see you got the garbage, and I see you got the compost bin, but there's something missing here. And for many of us who've been practicing, some for many years or some were brand new, that's what's missing. There's no composting going on. Right? We're inventorying our garbage, and we feel comfort in knowing that we have a composter available, and we've read the books. But we're not getting dirty. We haven't learned to when the garbage is here, how to work skillfully with it. Is that clear? Yeah. So we can't fool ourselves and call ourselves Dharma practitioners if we're not practicing Dharma. It's as simple as that. If we are still run around by our fears, our angers, our resentments, our pettiness, our egocentricity, we are not practicing Dharma. We are practicing what? The way of the world. We are practicing the Dharma of the world, the Dharma that most people in the world practice, right? That's the truth. The Buddha's Dharma is a different Dharma. Dharma just means many things. One thing just means the way. And there's the Dharma of worldly life, and there's the Dharma of the Buddha. There's the Dharma of unenlightened life, and there's the Dharma of enlightened life. And the choice of each of us is which Dharma in this life am I going to practice? Many of us put on the coats and the jackets of the Dharma. We put on the mask of the Dharma. But inside, we're still practicing. We're like actors and actresses. Right? We play our roles. We have our costumes. But we are not... that is not who we are. So we have to stop play-acting at our spiritual transformation and healing. Or we will never receive the benefits of it. It's as simple as that. This Dharma is very simple. This way is very simple. But it's a different way than the way of the world. And when I say the world, way of the world, I mean we're all in the world. But it means the way of the world means the world sees things as permanent. And the Buddha sees things as impermanent. The way of the world is always to seek something in this world of impermanence for happiness, for safety. The way of the Dharma is we know that cannot be found in the world of things. We don't reject the world of things, but we understand clearly how they are, and so we handle them skillfully. But worldly people are always trying to grab on to something, right? They can only grab on to something and hold on to it, whether it be money, whether it be a house, whether it be a job, whether it be a relationship, whatever it is. If I could just hold on to it and have it be the way I want it, if it would only never change, you know, stay the same, then what? Then I'll be happy. Then I'll feel safe. But it doesn't work that way. Because that's not the way things are. But that's what ignorance is. That's why, that's what delusion is. When we live in ignorance and delusion, even though things are impermanent and changing and nothing is stable and nothing is solid, and grasping after things and trying to hold on to things only creates suffering, still we do it. Time after time, day after day. You know, there is that, you know, the one of the, you know, the road in the holes, you know, it's a famous kind of thing out there, right? You know, walking down the road, falling in the hole, didn't see the hole, didn't know how you got there. It's not pleasant. Pick yourself up, continue walking. Next day, same thing, right? That's most people, right? How did I get here? Why am I suffering again? Why am I angry? Why am I resentful? Why am I fearful? Why, you know? Keep stumbling a hole, don't see a damn thing. Step two is what? A little wisdom. I'm beginning to notice there are holes in the road. And I walk down the road and I see the hole and I still fall in. Right? Even though I see it, my habit energy, my ignorance is still dominating me. So I still fall in. And this goes on, right? We get better at you know, seeing them falling in, but we get out quicker, right? And we're quite proud of that, aren't we? Many of us say, yeah, I'm really doing better. I mean, I used to go on for days. Now it only goes on for days. Or I used to scream and yell, and now I only, you know, right? So we pride ourselves on getting out of the hole quicker than we used to. And that's true, right? That is better than. But, you know, what does that really mean? The hole is there, and we're still falling into it. And we know it's not a good hole. And we know we don't want to be there, and yet we continually go in, and then we pride ourselves on how well we get ourselves out. And then we get better and better, and of course, over time, we what? We walk down the road, we see the hole, and we walk around it. Right? And now we're really proud of ourselves. Many people, our Dharma practice is just that. Let us be clear. We are still worldly people with all our worldly ambitions and our, you know, our clingings, our avoidances, our, you know, but we're just using Dharma to become more skillful in navigating this road. And that's good. But that's not the Buddha's teaching. because there is another road that's not full of holes, where you don't always have to be on guard. Do you know what that road is? That is the road, that is the path, that is the way of Dharma. What is that road about? Well, it's a road that sees clearly. Lives in the world the way it is. It's a road that sees everything is impermanent, everything is changing, nothing is stable, everything is made of parts. There's no me, there's no you, there's no anything. Everything is just made of parts, everything is interdependent, everything arises because of everything else. Right? There's no birth, there's no death, there's none of that nonsense. It's just this. It's a world of great freedom. We can be in the world of things, we can be in the world of relationships, and yet free, happy, because we understand exactly how things are. We're not attracted to holes anymore. We know what a hole is. And spending our life walking down a street full of holes, even if we're getting very skillful at jumping over them or walking around them, is still, what kind of life is that? Wouldn't we rather walk down a road that has no holes? That's easy, isn't it? The other one, you always have to be on guard, don't you? You always have to be working. Gotta make, you know, every day, gotta make sure I don't fall any holes today. The holes are created by ourselves. There are no holes other than the ones that we create. All the afflictions are all created in our own mind. This other path, this other road, is a road to what's called enlightenment. And many people think enlightenment's like a big deal, only for the Buddhas and the great masters, right? Somebody who's enlightened is just somebody who sees clearly. What do they see clearly? This life. They see it just the way it is. So the worldly path does not lead to enlightenment. It just endlessly leads to a circular wanting, needing, getting, losing, wanting, needing, getting, losing, wanting, needing, getting, losing, you know, just round. The other path leads to a deep sense of peace. There's no more striving. There's no more getting. There's no more needing. You know, because you know you don't need anything. That everything is fine just the way it is. And you are fine just the way you are. And there's nothing that needs to be done. Everything is perfect unto itself. So what is the purpose of this road of Dharma, this Buddha road, is to come to the understanding of that, and then to be of help to everyone that you can. No longer is our life based on self-concern. If you think about all our decisions and our choices and our worries and our anxieties and our cautions, then usually it's all around me. But in the Buddha's path, the criteria is Does this benefit others? How is this benefiting others? That can be scary to many people. They think, oh my God, if I don't really always take care of myself, what's going to happen? Do you want to find out? You may be surprised that things are not as they appear. Many people think that change comes slowly. Right? Change comes like this. Getting to the point where we're ready to change, that's what often comes slowly for many people. But change just, you know, one day you do it. Right? You've been holding on, weighing, cost-benefit analysis, back and forth, caution, and then one day you do it. You know? And you think that somehow all that back and forth and neurotic stuff somehow helped you come to that. No. It's not like that. When your child is scared and calls out in the night to you because they're scared, they think there's a monster in the closet or something's under the bed, right? And you go in there, and what do? You turn on the light and you show them there's nothing there. And immediately what happens to their fear? Their terror. Immediately it disappears. It doesn't take days. One moment of insight, one moment of understanding, and everything becomes clear, and all the misperception and the afflictions that come from the misperceptions disappear just like that. They're not real. They're not solid things. That transformation from a terrorized child to a relaxed, happy child just takes a few moments, doesn't it? And yet we make such a big deal about it. Right, Andrew? Art, because our stuff is what? Uniquely deep. Our stuff is big. And change takes time. And if you believe change takes time, you know what? It'll take time. If you believe your stuff is deep, powerful, your habit energy is so powerful, it will be. I assure you. If you think that you don't have the capacity to be enlightened and be free, I assure you, you will never be enlightened and be free. It's as simple as that. Much probably has gone on in the last couple of days about dealing with our afflictions, dealing with anxieties and fears, understanding the causes and conditions. Am I right? I haven't been here, but I would imagine that's what you've been up to. Okay. I mean, just guessing that when I'm not here, you're not all just kind of, oh, he's gone, now we can... sunbathe out on the, you know... take off the cover off the TV screen. So I would imagine you've been working on this on the stuff. The power of an aspiration. The power of an aspiration to just take you on a different journey than you ever thought about or thought that you were capable of. In Mahayana Buddhism, the aspiration to be free, the aspiration to be happy, the aspiration to be peaceful, and even more importantly, the aspiration to do that all in order to benefit and be of help to other people, is called bodhicitta. Thought of enlightenment. And for thousands of years, it has been a motivator. If you are impressed by people like Dalai Lamas and Thich Nhat Hanhs, understand they are who they are only because of bodhicitta. Other than that, they would just be ordinary people doing ordinary things. They are who they are only because of bodhicitta. Because in their mind, the most predominant thought or aspiration, motivation, has been to awaken themselves and lead an awakened life and to benefit others. I would imagine in this room, many people look to people like the Dalai Lama or Thich Nhat Hanh or others as what? Enlightened beings, but I would imagine they are mentors, right? People that we take as teachers. Well, you know, your aspiration should be to be like them. I want to be like them. Right? I mean, if you have a teacher, a mentor in anything, what better compliment could you do them as, you know, I want to be as good as you. You know, that's why I'm studying with you, right? I want to be as good as you. That's why I want to learn everything and watch you very carefully. And yeah, I want that. In Mahayana Buddhism, the aspiration to be a Buddha, an enlightened person, an enlightened human being, is the aspiration. That's not grandiosity at all. And that is a very powerful motivation. And all the other worldly meanderings that we do to try to find comfort and safety and pleasure and happiness by all our running abouts, all our consumptions, all our little narrow self-centered ways of trying to find happiness or safety, pale, are insignificant when measured up against bodhicitta. And the happiness and the meaning and the value you get from living an altruistic life as opposed to living a self-centered life is like night and day. So in Mahayana Buddhism, this bodhicitta, this aspiration, this thought of enlightenment as a continuing, ongoing thought that is always in the mind, that is always present in every situation of our life, is considered one of the most powerful things that one can do to not keep going down that road with all the holes in it. You know why we fall in the holes? Because we're still attracted to them. We have to admit that. We're still attracted. We're still attached. We still want things to be a certain way. We're disappointed when they're not. We worry that things may not be the way I want them to be. I had a conversation with somebody recently who was very concerned about global warming and climate change and said, you know, I gotta get out of Florida. You know, this is not the place to be. With global warming, the seas are rising, you know, it's like, you know, I gotta get out of here. Find a safe place for myself and my family. Right? And after that conversation, I thought to myself, no. Who's gonna stay here to help all the people who are, you know, who need help? Who are scared, who are suffering, who's gonna, do you just think of yourself? Or do you think of others? You know, what is the motivation? What are we here for? What is our purpose in life? You know, people who've never heard anything about enlightenment or the selflessness or altruistic life sacrifice to their lives for bigger principles every day, don't they? Firemen go into burning houses. What? People put themselves in danger all the time. Parents will put themselves between danger and their child. What? The capacity for selflessness and the capacity to cherish others even more than oneself is natural. Right? Animals do it, don't they? Right? Animals do it. Little birds will protect their babies against bigger birds, won't they? We see it in nature. All kinds of animals will protect their children against predators, even at their own sacrifice of their own life. Those are animals. They've never read a book on altruism. If animals can do that, how can we not? So there is another road. The road of worldly concerns. And when I say worldly, I don't mean like in a negative way. I mean, we're all in the world. When I say worldly, means that that's all we see. That's all we want. And that's where we're looking for our happiness. Again, it doesn't mean you don't have relationships. It doesn't mean you don't have homes. It doesn't mean you don't, have savings accounts or whatever. But you understand there's nothing safe in any of that. Why hold on to it? Right? People, they buy their houses because they think what? Good investment. Right? And then it goes up, and how do they feel? Good. But what happens then? Unfortunately, what? It goes down, then how do they feel? Bad. Right? Uh-oh. You know, they invest in stocks or whatever they invest in, right? When it goes up, how do they feel? Great. When they go down, how do they feel? Terrible. Yeah. Holding on, holding on, holding on, right? We invest in relationships, right? Every day, how many people get married? Ever been to a wedding? Maybe. I mean, some of us have been to our own. Do people say the most wonderful things and make the most wonderful commitments for life? And then what happens? I won't comment. But, that's the truth, isn't it? Right? Right. Your children, when they're little, they look up to you like you're the wisest, most wonderful person in the world, right? And then they turn 14, and what happens? Right? I mean, that's just the way it is, isn't it? And that's okay. If we understand that that's just the way it is, and we're not looking for permanence or stability or things always to be the same, or we're looking for anything from those relationships that'll make us continually happy and safe, You know, that's the worldly life. It can't give it to us, can it? Because because everything is subject to change. Everything is impermanent. Everything is responding to many, many causes and conditions, which, as Molly has learned, we cannot control. So we need something else to depend on. Something else to rely on. We need another road. Another path. Outwardly, it looks the same, right? You know, you can't always pick them out in the crowd. Right? We all look the same. So the path is a path that goes on in the mind and that is expressed through words and through actions of the body. You don't have to practice the Dharma, you don't have to adopt a certain look or a certain way of dressing. You know, that's not the Dharma. The Dharma it's in your mind. It's expressed through the way you speak and the way you act. So, you can be in the world, you know, with all the things of the world, but your mind is free. The trouble with most ordinary people, their minds aren't free. They're attached, stuck. And the ups and downs and the backs and forth and the successes and the failures and the likes and dislikes that go on in life are what? Paramount to them. Are there any questions? I mean, you've been working hard these days. I mean, I realize what I'm saying may sound, I don't know how it sounds. Strange, or off the ball, or extreme, or... Anything not clear? Hopefully everybody is, because we are moving toward the end of the retreat, and we have to anticipate. Right. Going back, you know, because we have been here for 3 days, we've done what we've done, and we maybe have a different way of feeling or seeing or viewing life, ourselves, right, our emotions, but family, friends, colleagues, life have continued on. So, we are going back into that world, which is our world. But perhaps we are different now. And we have to be clear that when we leave here, we have to be clear. We have to be strong. We have to be open. And we have to what? We have to keep nourishing this, because if we don't nourish this, I assure you, it will fade. Something's cracked open. That crack will close again if you're not conscious about keeping that open and just opening it. That's practice. You know, we talk about practice. That's practice. That's what we cultivate. What nourishes that? Well, internally, that is nourished by your desire to be free, your desire not to be stressed, to be anxious, to suffer, to be closed, to be walled, you know, all the things. You have to have a desire to be free of all that. You know, we in Buddhism, they talk about freedom, liberation, you know, these kind of words. Well, that's what it means. These aren't like big words. These are very personal words. It means I want to be liberated from all the stuff that causes me suffering. that all the stuff that constricts me, that all the stuff that when I feel walled off or separate, I want to be liberated from all of that. Anybody want to be liberated from all of that? Yeah. I mean, that's liberation, right? So that has to be cultivated in you. Okay? That, and the more that is cultivated, the more that is nourished, that aspiration, the stronger it'll be, and the better, there'll be more energy for just widening that crack. But if there's no nourishment of that, it will close. Is that clear? Everybody here may have be in a good place right now, with insights, with understanding, with clarity, but, you know, if you don't nourish it, you know, because you spent 3 days, right, in a situation that was controlled, right? There was silence, I mean, there was structure, there were constant talks and guided meditations. I mean, you've been nourished, right? As well as you could be single-mindedly concentrated for 3 days on what you wanted to focus on. That is not going to be there for most of us. Maybe even today, later today, or tomorrow. Right? So it has to be nourished from where? From the inside. You have to, we call it the seed, the thought of enlightenment is a seed. It is a seed within us. Everybody here has that seed of enlightenment, but it has to be nourished. Right? For those who are gardeners, right? If you have a seed and it sits in the packet, you might say, oh, I have a seed. And it's a seed of a beautiful flower or a great vegetable, or, right? But if it's not planted in the earth, and if it's not taken care of, it will not become anything other than a seed. Is that clear? So all of us have seeds. Seeds of awakening, seeds of goodness, seeds of open-heartedness, seeds of love, seeds of compassion, seeds of patience, seeds of fearlessness, seeds of courage. I mean, we all have seeds of understanding, seeds of intelligence, right? Endless positive seeds. But if we don't cultivate them, they will not grow. On the other hand, if, you know, if Krista goes out there tomorrow and cultivates her seed of fear and anxiety and self-deception and all that, right? Those will grow. And that's what we've been doing. Right? We've been nourishing the wrong seeds. The seeds that in our more rational moments we go, no, I don't want that, you know? You know, how did somebody like me get to have a mind? You know, I mean, many people, they don't like meditation. You know why? Because they got to hear themselves. And that's the last person you want to hear. Right? I'd much rather just stay distracted. You know, can I surf the internet, or, you know, go shopping, or, you know what I'm saying? Do something other than what? To face the fact that I've been nourishing these neurotic seeds. Seeds of anger, seeds of resentment, seeds of sadness, seeds of despair, seeds of fear, you know what I mean? That's what we've been nourishing, day after day, right? And then we're shocked, we're dismayed, we're embarrassed when we begin to meditate and we look inside and see what we've created in there. Right? I mean, who are we going to hold responsible? Right? So, we need to cultivate the right seeds and stop cultivating the wrong seeds. I mean, and everybody knows what those are, don't they? Now, let me just say something about Buddha Dharma Sangha. Okay? If you're walking this path, this other path, right? Then going back to the Buddha himself, there is support for that, for those of us who walk the path. And that is, you know, you've been reciting them, right, in your morning chanting. the three refuges, right? You know, the Buddha means this lineage of human beings who have achieved to one degree or another that freedom and that liberation, right? That is the potential of all of us, right? We need the help and the support and the mentoring and the guidance and the inspiration of human beings who've done it, who live it. Is that clear? Because that makes it real for us. Or else it becomes some kind of theology or something, you know. We have to understand that this is about this. You know, so when you read the Buddhist teachings, you read, oh, he's a human being. Eyes, ears, nose, mouth, you know, was married, had a child, you know, the whole deal. Right? And this is his wisdom that came out of his enlightenment as a human being, one human being to another. When you read all the masters, all the teachers right down to the present day, see them as your, you know, where, what does it say in the, it's so meaningful, in the incense offering. We say what? May we be companions, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. What does that mean? It's a wonderful phrase. It means, I see these people as my companions in this life. What's a companion? A friend, but a close friend. A companion is somebody who's right beside you. Close, a companion. So, you know, if we're going to have companions for our spiritual life, right? Who do you want them to be? Who are your companions for your spiritual life? Do you know who they are? You know, you have to get clear. Same way, you know, many people seek a companion for the worldly life, right? Give them support, somebody to hang out with, you know, somebody to share the household tasks with, you know, stuff like that, right? We look for companions, right, in this life. Well, when we're living a spiritual life, we'll work. A life to awaken, we need companions, we need mentors, we need companions. Is that clear? May Buddhas and Bodhisattvas be my companions in this life. Have a personal relationship with them. I mean, don't see them as gods, don't see them, you know, see them as human beings. And they're just sharing their experience. And I listen to them, I take their advice. They're wise people. You know, they've been here. You know, why do they teach? Right? I mean, why did the Buddha teach? I mean, he could have just hung out, you know, after his great enlightenment, right? Eating grapes by the river, enjoying himself.
Right? But others.
What?
To benefit others.
To benefit others, right? Right? I mean, why does Thich Nhat Hanh and Dalai Lama, these guys are in their 80s, right? And they're still trucking around this world, you know. I mean, well, you know, I mean, nonstop. You know, I mean, they're not like salting it away in their bank account. I mean, you know, why are they doing this? I think you know why they're doing it. So, it's important that we understand that and feel that. So that connection with mentors, with teachers, with masters. Again, and with the living, is so important. So that nourishes and supports us. Then Dharma, you know, the teachings and the practices. You know, study, reflect. Good if we can do it every day until it really gets in the mind. And it becomes really your own way of seeing, your own way of viewing. You hear your own voice saying these wise things. But until you do, you know, you need somebody else's voice to guide you. That's Dharma. Those are the teachings, the practices. And the more you expose yourself to that, think about it, reflect on that, try to see situations through the eyes of the Dharma, again, that will nourish and support you. And then third is what? Sangha. Sangha is community. This, you know, for these 3 days. This is a sangha. This is a community. Right? It is helpful, isn't it, to have others, to know you're not alone, right? You know, if you're in a retreat and you're going through a rough time or something, and you go over there and you happen to see somebody else and they're, you know, sitting quite serenely, or they seem, you know, you go, oh, that's helpful. That's helpful to see them, isn't it? And you know, sometimes they may be going through a little rough spot in their practice, and they may see you, and that helps them. So it's good to have friends. In the same way, in the worldly life, it's good to have family and friends to support our worldly life. It is the same in our spiritual life, to have friends, to have family. And they're not exclusive. I mean, one can have both. A little bit like the Mormons or something. You can have... You can have two families. You don't have to worry about illegality, okay? So you can have your biological family, you can have your friends, you can have your work colleagues, but then you also have your Dharma friends, your Dharma community, your Sangha, to support your spiritual life. And they don't, they all work together. They just make our life richer. Again, because we do not live in a highly spiritualized society and culture, because the values of our culture are so sick, are so unhealthy, and the mentors of this worldly life seem to be driven by power and greed, you know, celebrity, you know, all the superficial things in life, and that because of the power of the media and the endless images our minds are receiving, is very difficult to maintain and cultivate that thought of enlightenment and daily practice, you know, without a counterweight in your life. So, I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh said, Sangha is actually most important in this current age. Because without Sangha, practicing Buddha Dharma is too difficult to do it alone. Just because of the nature of the culture we live in. So again, if we have, if we bring the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha in our life, we now have a good, supportive, instructive structure that can facilitate our walking this different road in life. Dharma is not a strategy to cope better. Dharma is not a strategy to get out of the hole quicker. For many of us, we've settled for that. Right? Many of us, we've practiced a while and we go, yeah, things are better. Things are better. Calmer. More peaceful. Less angry, less worried, less resentful. Less, you know, things are a little better. Right? And when I still get bent out of shape, they don't last as long as they used to. Right? Buddha Dharma Sangha. But that's not the teaching of Buddha Dharma Sangha. Doesn't mean it can't be helpful in that, because we're in transition, where it's a developmental model. The Buddha Dharma Sangha is the Dharma way is a different road in life. Is that clear? It doesn't matter what you do, what your job is, you know, wherever you are, you have only one thought. I mean, whatever you're doing, you may be doing lots of different things. Everybody in this room may be doing, but you have one thought. What, you know what your one thought is? May this be a benefit to others. That's in your heart. Whatever I'm doing, may it benefit others. That's all. In that way, you're always cultivating this loving heart. And whatever goes on during the day, in family, in relationships, at work, whatever goes on, you're always dealing with it from a point of view of Dharma. Seeing things as impermanent rather than permanent. Being aware that attachment and aversion are the causes of suffering. When you see yourself grasping at something, you know. So again, the practice of Dharma goes on all day. Your awakening goes on all day. If you're not practicing, if you're not doing that, then you're not practicing Dharma. It's as simple as that. Okay? In my own practice, if ever I am not like this, I know it's because I'm not practicing. And I remind myself to practice. And then it's easy like that. Oh, yeah. Is that clear? Stop. We have to stop kidding ourselves that we're practicing Dharma when we're not. If we are suffering, we are not practicing. Because the Buddha's teaching teaches what? About not suffering. That's what the Buddha teaches. I teach one thing, the cessation of suffering. If we're suffering, we're not practicing. And that's the truth, isn't it? Anybody disagree with me? Yes.
Is it composting suffering?
Have you ever composted?
Well, when you're talking.
Have you ever composted?
Yes.
All right. Is it suffering?
No.
No. You know. Yeah. Dealing with the garbage. Taking that garbage and mixing it all up and, you know, throwing in some other ingredients. And I mean, I love composting myself. I love to get dirty. How about you? it all depends how you relate to it, Liz. You know, this path is called the path of joyful effort. Have you heard that? It's one of the paramitas, joyful effort. That means, oh, how wonderful. I got a foul pile of garbage right here, and I know how to compost it. Oh, that makes me happy. Right?
I always thought jumping in the hole to compost it, and that's garbage stuff.
Yeah, no, you. No, if you jump in the hole, you're not composting. Hold on, have you ever composted?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you go out there and you see a pile of garbage and you just got to get down there and roll around in it? No. That's not composting. What do, Liz? You're kind of skillful. You get your pitchfork, you mix it. Yeah, it's like that. Right. I mean, this is not about rolling around in the garbage. You get it? And that's many people think. We're not here to roll. You know, we can do that on our own. Is that clear? I mean, we don't need Dharma for that. Dharma is about how to compost, knowing you can compost, knowing how to work skillfully with the garbage. So that's important. It's not wallowing. It's not rolling around. It's not chewing on it.
Yeah, because I've been practicing that. I'm getting better. Your road analogy is spot on for me, because I've been practicing. Ooh, I got out of that hole so much faster.
Yeah.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I mean, on a
Yeah.
Again, developmentally, obviously, if you're still falling in holes, getting out of them is good. But we have to understand that Dharma is calling for us to walk a different road in life. Now, again, you know, we don't often, you know, if we're in the road with potholes, you know, we're going to have to work our way through. But again, let's be clear, you know, like you're saying, we got to be clear. This is not about getting better at, you know. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Somebody? Okay. So we have a few minutes. So again, you know, we're all going back out there. You got to be clear, you got to be inspired, and you got to nurture that inspiration every day. I'm looking at Liz. Liz, you're a parent. I mean, do you kind of, you know, every now and then pay attention to your kids? Some days you do, some days you don't. Right? Some days you let them do whatever they want, and then other days, all of a sudden, you decide, well, maybe, oh, oh my God, I forgot I'm a parent. I haven't really fed them for about 4 days now. I mean, they're wearing the same dirty underwear to school every day, you know. Right? Oh, I better get back on. Is that how you parent? Why not, Liz?
Oh, because I love them.
And because you're a good parent. Mm-hmm. And to be a good parent, you know you got to what? Tend them every day. Okay? Yeah, it's that same commitment. You know, we need to tend our mind, our actions of body, speech, and mind every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you hate being a parent? You don't. But it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But you like it. Isn't that, you mean sort of joyful effort? Oh. Mm-hmm. There you go. It's just like that. Huh? Yeah. Kids always do what you want? No. It's always happy times in the strip house. No, sometimes, yeah. But it's okay. It's like that. Composting. When there's a problem, you just deal with it and work with it. You don't wallow in it, do you?
Do I?
Yeah, I mean, is that what you do in your family when the kids are just, let's just wallow in this stuff. I mean, let's just stay angry at each other for a few days. Right?
No, and if you do it, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, but that's what we do with ourselves. You know, let me just, inside we're going, oh, I'm just going to stay pissed at this person for, I don't know how many days. Just got to run it around in my mind for hours and hours and hours. Right? Just be as angry as I can be. I'm just going to worry about this one for days, you know. Crazy, isn't it? So I want to end with, and some of you have been around a while, but I don't think I've mentioned them in a couple of years. These are the three fierce mantras of Tsongpa Gyara Yeshe Dorje, Tibetan master in the 12th century. That was a while ago. Okay. Mantras are what? Anybody know what a mantra is? Words? No. Good thing this is not a game show. Words of power. That's what a mantra is supposed to be. Usually they're Sanskrit, you know, words of power. So these are words of power. But these are fierce mantras. Fierce means what? Strong. Like Bodhidharma. The first mantra, and again, you can, you don't have to write them down, you can Google them or something. Just three fierce mantras. There are not too many of them. Three fierce mantras. First fierce mantra. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Why? Because it's going to happen anyhow, isn't it? Right? What? Get out of the way. You know, work with it. Relate to it. But let it unfold. Stop trying to control. Right? See wisely. See compassionately. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Think about things in your life. Let it happen means you step back. You accept the situation, you know, it's just, you know. Let it happen. Right? Don't know. Let it happen. Number two. Whatever the situation is, it's fine. Whew, we don't like that one. No, there's lots of things in the world that aren't fine, right? But this is a fine that's not like, it's not a fine as opposed to an unfine. It's a fine meaning when you understand cause and effect, you understand that things cannot be any different than they are. in this moment, this person, this situation, this life, this world is manifesting as it is, this body, you know, because of causes and conditions, it cannot be in this moment otherwise. It's fine. No resistance, no rejection, no anger, no fear. Everything is fine. It is what it is. If you practice those two, whatever has to happen, let it happen. Whatever the situation is, it's fine. Is there any anxiety in any of that? Is there any fear in any of that? Is there any worry in any of that? All canceled. These are powerful mantras. You don't need anything else. If you want to be free of fear, if you want to practice the way of non-fear, whatever has to happen, let it happen. I'll deal with it. That's what makes life interesting. Whatever the situation is, it's fine. Whatever it is. Good, bad, indifferent. Situation with my body, my health, my well-being, the loved ones, people, life, world, whatever it is, it's fine. It is the way it is. Causes and conditions have created it. Can't be any different than it is in this moment. That's all. Could it be that simple? We have to let go of a lot of stuff on that one. Wow, we have lots of stuff built around that. You mean I got to accept things just as they are? People will go, well, hold on a second. That's how things are. I mean, you just said it. Right, David? Yeah. That's the way things are. I mean, you know, the question is, what? You know, what do you want to do? That's all. There's no emotion in that. It's like, what do you want to do? That's all. And the third fierce mantra is, I don't need anything whatsoever but the Dharma. Now, it's funny because some translations don't have, and in this one it has parentheses, but the Dharma. So I don't know if that was added or what, or that was the translator saying that that's what was meant. But it's often just, I don't need anything whatsoever. Now what does that mean? That's very powerful. Again, that is so contradictory. We think we need so many things, don't we? I don't need anything whatsoever. To be what? That's the question. I don't need anything whatsoever to be happy. Right, Tammy? Yeah. I mean, would it be nice to have friends and family and loved ones and everything, you know, nice life? Of course. But if it was all taken away, I know that I could be happy. Because this is, it's wherever you are, one has the capacity of what? Of generating well-being and peace and mindfulness and presence and awareness and what? I don't need anything whatsoever. So they've added the Dharma, which means, you know, the reason we get to this place is because of the Dharma. So as long as I have, which means as long as I have understanding, as long as I'm clear, and as long as I have the tools within me to always cultivate well-being. You know, and again, I mean, you know, unless we're the last person left standing, there'll always be somebody to help. Right? Somebody to be kind to. Right? So I leave you these three fierce mantras. They have the power to liberate you. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Because however it ends up, it'll be fine. Because you don't need anything to be happy. Is that clear? Many of you, you are here in this room at this retreat because you are not fully happy yet. Is that true? And yet many of you have many of the things that you've worked so hard for in your life, haven't you? What does that tell you about what you need to be happy? I think we need all these things and people and to be happy. And it hasn't worked out that way, does it? Yeah. And it doesn't mean we get rid of them all, but it means we understand that this, yeah, that's fine. It's nice to have these things, but if they all disappeared or changed, that'd be fine too. Right? Anybody disagree with that? Take them with you. You need to, you know, please put them up on your mirror every day. Whatever has to happen, let it happen. Whatever the situation is, it's fine. I don't need anything whatsoever, parentheses, but the Dharma. So we'll take a short break. And you know, in the closing circle, we used to do lots of thanks. Everybody usually by the end of the retreat is feeling a lot of gratitude. So that's accepted. But we don't have to say it. Okay? Because that's kind of looking a little backwards. And what's really most important are the things we've talked about today, which is the next big step for us, when the retreat ends at 12:30, is, returning to our life. So what I want you to do as we go on this break for 10 minutes or so before the closing circle is, it's been a lot of teaching in this meditation, guided meditations. Everybody here has done a lot of work. You have your own insights. You have your own experiences. You have your own aspirations. In the closing circle, since there are so many people, everybody maybe gets maximum 2 minutes. Encouraged 1 minute. So this is piff. Okay? And somebody will have a little watch. And at the end of 1 minute, we'll give a little ding. It means you still have a little time, but this is important because you want to be able to... Because what often happens in the past when we have a lot of people is, and again, it's hard, I know, because there's a lot in, but then all of a sudden, because we have kitchen staff and then we don't want to keep them waiting, and then kind of everybody, then the last 10 to 15 people are all kind of feeling the pressure. So we want to kind of even it out. What I want you to do, and you can write them down, or just what is, over these next minutes, think about all that's gone on for you in this retreat, and what are the most important things that you want to take home with you that you want to remember? To make your life different, to change your relationship with fear, and all the things we talked about. What do you want to remember to take with you? Is that clear? So there may be one or two or three, I don't know how much you can get into. I guess if you're a fast talker, you can probably... But is that clear? This is important. It's important that we publicly say that at the end of retreat, we all share, what is it that I want to remember? What is it that I want to take home? What's most important? And this is just to you. And if somebody has said the same thing, three persons before you, that doesn't matter. The important thing is this is, don't think about anybody else. And just spend a few minutes, because again, a lot's gone on, and I'm sure internally you've gone through lots of things. But what do you want to take home with you? Into your life to make a difference.